Welcome to Equity. I'm Katie Roof, joined by my colleague, Matthew Lindley.
Hello.
Crunchbase News Editor-in-Chief, Alex Wilhelm.
Hey.
And our special guest today is Cyan Bannister, who is a partner at Founders Fund. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Hello.
So, really big news week. We did two episodes last week, so hopefully you caught them both. And, of course, there's more Uber news this week. It just doesn't stop. Travis has officially resigned.
Do we like that word, resigned, or do we like pushed out, pushed over a cliff, fired? Do we have a different phrase?
Sent a strongly worded letter.
Bill Gurley walked in.
Pressured.
Bill Gurley walks into a room.
Faced significant pressure to resign. I mean, technically, he had enough control with his ownership that he resigned. He wasn't fired, but he was heavily pressured to fire.
So tomato, fired. Okay. Yeah. As long as I understand the situation.
But I wanted to get your perspective, Cyan, because you've known the Uber team forever. You were an angel investor way in the early days. Was it 2010?
I was in the seed round.
Seed round.
So, yeah,
okay.
I was in the seed round.
So
I actually don't know the team super well, mostly just because I don't know if you know the story about how I found Uber in the first place, but it was through my Uber driver.
Did you want to tell us?
Yeah, tell us your story.
Sure, yeah. So basically, my driver was one of the first Uber drivers. I guess there's like six people who claim to be the first Uber drivers, but my driver, I believe, was number one. He basically told me, he's like, I'm not an investor, but if I was, you should invest in this company called UberCab. And he handed me Ryan Graves' business card.
Yes.
And it had like a Chicago phone number on it. And I was like, well, it doesn't fit my investment thesis in Chicago. It's not my backyard. I just put it away. And so I went to the airport a few more times and he kept telling me, he's like, I now have my whole family on Uber. We're all driving for Uber. Have you called Ryan Graves? And I'm like, no, I haven't called Ryan Graves. So it wasn't until I went to August Capital has this event called The Lobby in Hawaii. I went to that and I met Travis for the first time because I'm not actually in that network. And I met him and I thought to myself, I had a really great conversation with him. And I said, here's somebody that's on the bench who has gravitas. Like he has a presence. Like there's something about him that like is feisty. And I just sort of filed it away. That's what I do as an investor. I file away like personality tidbits about people. And then basically forgot about him. I ended up going to Open Angel Forum, which is one of Jason Calacanis's things. And he was pitching UberCab. And that's when I realized, I'm like, oh, that guy that was on the bench who has the attitude and sort of like gravitas to fight the taxi industry is probably going to be the CEO. So I called Ryan Graves. and I hadn't met Ryan Graves yet. Ryan Graves is a wonderful person, you know, from my experience of, you know, meeting him in a short period of time. And basically we met with him and we did the investment through Ryan because Ryan was the CEO at the time.
Right. That's actually when I first got familiar with Uber back in Chicago as well. And I just pulled up some tweets from 2011 from August. Apparently we all went out drinking. That's why I remember this correctly, but it was me, him, and Justin Howard, who's the CEO and founder over at Sprout Social, probably the largest tech software company in Chicago today. Yeah, I like Ryan.
Yeah.
I was surprised when he stepped aside to let Travis be CEO, but that's
I actually thought it made a lot of sense.
So I didn't have a lot of context, so why did it make sense to you?
Ryan, I think, was probably the perfect operator at the time. If you're going to take on the whole taxi industry, you really needed the aggressiveness of Travis. You needed somebody to really, you know, being willing to put up a fight. And it was not going to be easy. And, you know, Uber paved the way for Lyft and a lot of other ride, you know, sharing services. They did some amazing things. I know they're under a lot of scrutiny right now and a lot of pressure, but they were industry defining. And so, you know, I really do think that Travis was the right person for the job.
So with Travis leaving then, are we at that point that we can safely say like, okay, you know, Uber and then by extension Lyft, like they did it, right? They beat the taxi industry. They're pretty much locked in. It's a habit. It's a daily habit at this point. Do we need a Travis archetype anymore? Now is it time to go back to someone, I don't know, like Ryan Graves or like a sort of operator? I know that, you know, there was a lot of dueling on Twitter as to whether or not Sheryl Sandberg would be the right person to run something like Uber. But is it, you know, is it because that they've, you know, they've effectively won? Or, I mean, obviously there's Didi and the rest of these guys, but is it because they, you know, the taxi industry has like finally caved and now ride sharing is just, you know, a permanent fixture?
It's standard now, right? It's a total user shift in, of behavior. I do think that it makes sense now to probably have somebody different. And I think that Travis must have obviously felt that too, just because I don't think that he's actually fireable. I assure that the investors, you know, wrote that letter and put a lot of pressure on him. But one of his statements, which I thought was pretty telling, was he said, you know, I don't want the employees to have to go through another fight. You know, I've always been focused on Uber. Uber's the thing I care about the most. So I am resigning. And I do think that faced with like your investors coming at you, your employees coming at you, the public coming at you, the right thing to do actually probably is to step down at that point.
And you're also invested in Lyft, so that's pretty unique. How did that happen that you're in both companies?
Yeah, I was in a startup that was acquired by Lyft, and there was a lot of consolidation going on with some of these smaller ride-sharing businesses. I ended up investing like across transportation. As an angel investor, you can do that. You know, as a venture investor, you really can't invest in competition. You pick one and you go, generally. But, you know, so I just happen to have a company that got acquired by them. And so I am a Lyft shareholder. I also work at Founders Fund, and we have a large position in Lyft, and we're very excited about Lyft. I actually think, personally, there can be more than one, and there probably should be for competitive reasons. It's better for consumers.
And so who do you think should be running Uber now? We mentioned Sheryl Sandberg earlier. I mean, is there anyone that you that stands out to you as the right person for the job? Alex just raised his hand.
Alex, let's make a mental note really fast that Alex is wearing sunglasses right now.
It's kind of bothering me. It's kind of weird.
I'm not going to let that joke begin. So I'm going to say my vote for next Uber CEO is just not Ariana. That's all I want to say.
Oh. All right. Ariana Huffington, of course, who's on the board.
Somebody who's had experience with a very large business. If you think Uber is like, what, 10,000 plus employees across the world. It's a global business. Someone who has logistics experience. So I would look in that space. You know, maybe someone from FedEx or, you know, I would probably think out of the box.
Well, they could just also buy Flexport and then install their CEO as to run the
Ryan
company.
Peterson?
Yeah,
well,
Ryan
I love
Peterson.
Ryan Peterson. So, hey, Ryan Peterson for Uber.
There was also some discussion that
he's doing some good stuff at Flexport.
There was some discussion that some former Ford execs could be in the running.
Oh, Alan Mulally, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Who was also in the running, if you recall, for Microsoft CEO before Satya picked up that title. I don't know. I don't have an opinion on Alan. I don't know much about him, or at least enough to have a good opinion. But do we have a general group think about if he would be a good fit for that job?
Well, the question you're asking is Uber, you know, is Uber a logistics company? Is it a ride sharing company, or is it like
it's
a car
both.
Company? Is
it's
it,
both.
Is it just a car company?
Yeah, they've right? kind of entered both. If you think about it, mostly just because they deliver packages, they deliver food. So they're kind of in the Postmates Amazon territory as well. And so the fact is, if they were going to go into automated vehicles, then they definitely start getting into logistics territory because they can move anything.
Yeah, so it's right? so it's basically get thing
from point A to point B,
which, you know, people are things that go from point A to point B. So maybe a guy running a car company is the right pick for Uber. But I mean, I think you probably have the best point, which is like you need someone, you know, Travis did a great job, you know, beating the crap out of the taxi industry and sort of like add, you know, obviously at great cost to the company and to the industry and things like and like to the company's perception. And now you need someone, you know, like someone like Jeff Bezos, who knows how to run a huge company that has a really, really complex web of logistics and all this other like chaotic internal machinations and things like that, right? So
Jeff Bezos would be perfect.
Yeah, there
you
go.
In fact, the idea.
Except only that he's not going to do it.
No.
I hear Amazon's a big deal.
One Uber investor who's not on the board but is involved told me he's hoping maybe someone like Susan from YouTube or David Marcus at Facebook would be good for the job. He really seemed to feel that it should be someone from a tech company. He feels like if they went a different route, there would be too much of a cultural difference. He wanted someone who really gets Silicon Valley. He's also not on the board, so he may not get his way.
You could bring in David Sachs to fix a company for like the third time at this point, right? Or
that
second
was another
time? Third
one
time?
Of his suggestions, actually. He also mentioned
are you
David
sarcastic
Sachs.
Or
well, David
serious?
Sachs is a great operator. I mean, he's a fantastic operator. And, you know, but I still think, you know, you need to find, you have to think bigger than, you know, YouTube's probably a pretty big organization, so YouTube, but it's still not a logistics organization. Even though this is a technology company, I think, like, running a global operation with this many drivers, like, Uber employs so many people now as contractors, and 10,000 employees, you got to find somebody who knows how to do that and fix the culture at the same time. Like, that's really hard to do.
What about Jeff Immelt, who's no longer the CEO of GE, right? I don't know. It's a global big enough firm.
Yeah,
I think he's independent.
I've seen that name thrown out there. I mean, my guess is that won't happen. But who knows?
I'm gonna keep going with Jeff Bezos here.
Like, yeah,
that's my bet. So, yeah, I mean, speaking of, you know, Jeff Bezos probably not buying Uber, is, you know, Amazon just spent $13.7 billion on some grocery chains.
But that isn't fully
Whole
done
Foods.
Though. Yeah, I thought there was still some potential.
Right, that's right. They announced it, but it's not completed. There's a $400 million breakup fee that Whole Foods would have to pay if they back out of it.
Sorry.
So that means, what was that?
I was gonna say correction, millennial grocery food chain.
Is it? It's kind of expensive for some millennials, to be honest.
I don't know which comment's worse, Matthew's or yours, but is a $400 million breakup fee on the side of Whole Foods? So if the deal falls through, Whole Foods pays Amazon $400 million.
If they accept a different offer or they decide they don't want Amazon's offer, then yes, that's right. Whole Foods will pay Amazon a $400 million breakup fee. And one other name that I saw an analyst and some people have thrown out there would be Walmart. I think mainly just because Walmart is interested in everything that Amazon's interested in. They already have. It's kind of true these days. They're
fighting for their lives.
They already have a grocery business as well. And lately, Walmart has just been really acquisitive. They've just been buying a whole bunch of stuff. So it's possible. I mean, you know, wouldn't be shocking if a giant deal doesn't end up going through. We see that from time to time. But most likely, they're probably going to go through with this acquisition. It's definitely an interesting one. I wasn't expecting it. I don't believe anyone that says that they predicted that Amazon was going to buy Whole Foods. Like, I never heard anyone say that was going to happen. And then all of a sudden, after the fact, some of my Twitter followers were like, yeah, obviously, it makes so much sense. I mean, it does make sense.
In hindsight.
Kind of. In hindsight. But, like, if I had written a story a week before, like, should Amazon buy Whole Foods, everyone would have been like, you're crazy. You have no idea what you're talking
stop
about.
Stop theory,
you
know? Crafting. Stop making stuff
right.
up. How drunk are you right now? And
right.
The moment it happens, they're like, I totally saw this coming. Like, absolutely.
Right.
Like, guys, follow me because I, like, totally know. Every single deal, acquisition, shutdown, or political change has the same results from our friends on Twitter. And we're probably guilty of this, too. I don't want to absolve this room from being.
Well, I totally saw it coming.
false.
For the record, I did not see it coming.
I'm a scioner. That's two votes for
no. I mean, no, but at the end of the day, you know, these big deals that are going to happen, well, A, like, we've seen companies swoop in at the last possible second to sort of pick up a company, you know, like AppDynamics and Cisco probably being the most obvious one recently, right? At the end of the day, it's the kind of the shareholders that are going to decide what to do here. And if they think that, okay, well, like, you know, we think that Amazon is going to extract the most value out of Whole Foods and being run by Jeff Bezos or being run by the kind of team that they install and having the data they have access to, or Walmart's going to buy it for a lot of money, but you know, you get paid like the guys did at Jet or, you know, Bonobos, the rest of these things. And so I don't know. I mean, I think maybe if I were a shareholder, like, it would make more sense within the kind of Amazon empire, right? Because they have access to probably way better data and probably way more organized data than Walmart, right? But I don't know. Maybe I'm the outlier here, I guess.
And Amazon shareholders like the deal. The stock has gone up. And so that is a compelling reason for them to both stick with it. But, you know, that could just be a temporary boost. But it's really interesting. Amazon these days, it's hard to define it. I mean, it was once this, you know, an online book company, and now they have AWS, which has become, you know, how so many different websites manage their business. And, I mean, it's just really, they have Twitch.
Why do they have Twitch? That's that's a good question to ask. I mean, aside from the tie-ins for like merchandising and some digital game sales on Amazon, and I'm an Amazon fan as a customer. I'm a Twitch fan as an esports fan. These are products that I use a lot. But it's like I like kumquats and I like tire bolts, and I don't really need to have them in the same bowl. But Amazon seems to want to do that. And
you're such a bad millennial. Man.
Oh gosh, I hate being a millennial. Every single think piece is aimed about why I'm crap, and I'm like, it's not me.
Have you met someone who's not a millennial who wishes to be a millennial? Always funny. No, but I've met people in my age group who are like, I'm a millennial, but they're off by like a year.
Sad though, is people who want to be teens.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, what are the teens doing? Snapchat is so cool. I'm 42. I'm like, you need to calm down.
Well, I mean, so if you look at Amazon, right, and, you know, all this like messy, large company that Amazon has become, including, you know, delivery and like trying to even like shorten the distance for that delivery down to an hour or like maybe minutes even, right? If you look at the kind of like efficiencies that a company like Instacart is trying to put into place, that's going to have like a serious like fallout for companies like Instacart or, you know, even Postmates, which started off as kind of like an on-demand delivery, some guy strapping a fridge on his back while he rode his bike to your apartment or something like that, right? I mean, do we think that, and obviously Instacart is on the whole defense right now. They're like, no, it's not that big of a deal. Like, you know, Amazon has declared war.
Their statement was surprisingly vitriolic.
Yeah.
I think Instacart's going to suffer the most just because they have the deepest integration into Whole Foods, whereas like DoorDash and Postmates, DoorDash goes to specific food partners and Postmates is deliver from anywhere. And so they've already built their businesses around not being dependent on one store, whereas Instacart, like, that is their flagship store.
And you were one of the first investors in Postmates as well, right? You were in so many of these newsworthy companies this week. And what do you think is the bull case for Postmates?
Well, Postmates, I mean, by all means, is not a grocery delivery service. And I think that that's what's helpful here is they deliver sandwiches, they deliver food. They also will deliver, like, you know, a stereo from Target. And
I once had Postmates bring me new bed sheets from Target. I was very proud of that. Yeah, and I saw the bill and I was like, that was a mistake.
I had them send me a phone charger. So, yeah, it's definitely not just food.
It's
a
hugely difficult problem if you can think about the complexities behind the logistics of getting anything from anywhere in under an hour. Because if you look, they don't have all the SKUs that Instacart has. Now, Instacart, on the other hand, I use Postmates for everything else but groceries. I use Instacart. I'm a customer. And mostly just because I know exactly which groceries I'm going to get. Postmates are not the best grocery shoppers, but Instacart shoppers are. And also people at Whole Foods are really good at putting stuff in the bag and getting it ready for the Instacart delivery person.
They have those extra checkout lines at the Whole Foods just for Instacart.
Yeah, just
That's
for Instacart.
That's awesome integration. I've always
and
loved that.
I personally love the experience. As a customer, I'm terrified of what's going to happen with this Amazon deal because I am a Whole Foods customer and I'm like, oh my gosh, are they going to have the same brand promise?
So they actually have a contract with Whole Foods that has a few years left. And so my understanding is they're still going to have Whole Foods delivery on there for now unless they come to some sort of agreement. But right now they're reassuring people that they have a few years left on their contract, which is interesting. I mean, because most likely you're going to be able to get Whole Foods delivered through Amazon as well, but
I don't know if you look at the Apple Qualcomm spat right now. I feel like contracts aren't as meaningful as they
look. All I'll say is I'm really looking forward to Amazon Fresh, Whole Foods Prime. Now it's gonna rule. By drone. Yeah. My point from the last step is that I live a block from Whole Foods, and it's a place where I eat too much and spend more money than I should. But also, if you integrate it with my Amazon stack and you let me pick up packages there and other stuff that are tied to their commercial cloud, whatever you want to call it, I'm going to be even more tied to their ecosystem, even probably closer than I am to the Alphabet world, which is a surprise to me. I didn't think I'd be there this year.
Well, Alphabet controls your data, and Amazon controls what you buy, right?
It's like Amazon versus the world right now, if you think about it. Like, they're taking on everybody, and so if you think everybody's Safeway— you know, all of them, Bonds, they've got to be just freaking out like Instacart right now. But it's also an opportunity. So if you look at it, because not everybody wants Amazon, you know, and so maybe they can all band together with Instacart and offer a completely different service from Amazon.
I think in general, what's interesting here is that Amazon's moving more and more into brick and mortar. It's not just with groceries. They now have bookstores,
isn't that weird?
Physical bookstores. So it seems like that is not just Amazon. We're seeing that with a lot of e-commerce startups where they were online first and moving into physical
stores.
But don't you
feel, did you find that weird?
It is a little weird.
When you see Barnes & Noble is gone. And,
yeah, they're like, oh, we killed Barnes & Noble, but let's
dance on their grave.
Bring it back with our own version of it. But
in the realm of Amazon everything and Amazon versus everybody, there was the rumor last week that Amazon might buy Slack, which took us all by surprise and was buried effectively because the next day the Whole Foods deal was dropped. And so I think that little rumor had about a 12-hour cycle.
That was not done on purpose at all.
That was totally not done on purpose at all. Not even close to coincidence. And then following that immediately was the rumor that Slack might raise another $500 million at a $5 billion post-money valuation, which also got a bit buried in the Whole Foods Amazon data dump. But on the Slack side, they've raised about $550 million to date. So if they pick up another $500, it's about a doubling of their aggregate private capital raised to date. And Lindley, you covered this for TechCrunch. So what was your first take on the idea that Slack might need another massive chunk of cheese?
Here's the question that we should be asking, right? Is Slack...
That was our producer, Mr. Gates, and now he cannot...
He forgot to turn his phone off.
He can't cut this out now because it's his mistake, so now this is going to be in the show. Literally, you were saying, go for it.
Well, no, the question is, you know, if you look at Slack, they, you know, they are potentially raising in a $5 billion valuation, but they need $500 million. After that huge round from Thrive previously... Are they raising money because they got a really good price tag from Amazon and they sort of shopped it around and they got a really good deal? Or like, do they actually really, really need it? Like, is this a, you know, do we take this as a signal like, oh, like Slack's doing so great. Their valuation is going up. Oh my goodness. It's such a darling. Or, you know, oh crap. Like, they have a ton of work to do, and the problem is way harder than we thought it was to begin with.
Let's just explain what Slack is for a second, because I know we live...
Sorry, we're in Silicon Valley.
I know we live in Silicon Valley, but I swear, there's a lot of people out there who don't know what Slack is, even though it's hyped here for sure, but... I think it's kind of glorified instant messaging, to be honest. It's instant messaging, yes, it's AIM, like... It's a much better version of AIM. Don't get me wrong. It has a great design, but it's chat rooms. It's chat rooms and one-on-one instant messaging for the enterprise, specifically for teams at work. And people out here love Slack. But yeah, I think the real question is it just Silicon Valley companies, or are they really going to make headways with large enterprises throughout the United States and the world?
And tying that back to what Lindley just brought up, their last round of capital was $200 million, which may sound like a lot of money for a glorified chat application. But when you want to build out a team that can handle international distribution and more languages and that sort of thing, you need a lot more capital. And to answer Lindley's question, I think if I was to make a guess, and this is just a conjecture from me, they know they can't go public right now. They're not ready. There's no point in pursuing that at their current state of maturity. And the markets are going to totally suck in a year.
Well, I mean,
why not get enough money to get you through the incoming trough so you can go public on the other side? And that's what this feels like to me.
What's the comp there? It's Atlassian, and Atlassian has a portfolio of products, right? It's not just internal communication. So if you're, you know, if I'm Slack and I'm looking at going public, I'm just like, okay, you know, I'm going, you know, I'm looking at like, you know, I guess I'm making the bet of Snap where I, you know, have a maybe comp to Facebook, except I'm a growth company and like you have to value me differently and so on and so on and so forth. And yeah, like the IPO window is open, right? But at the same time, it's like, you know, are they really going to be able to get into and grow into those really, really big companies and actually build a competitive, legitimate comp and not just have, you know, Amazon dangling a $9 billion price tag in front of them, right? But or Microsoft previously, like TechCrunch reported previously that Microsoft was interested.
I can't believe that deal didn't happen, by the way. That would have been, I think, a really good deal.
Are you not a Skype
deal.
User? You don't like Skype?
People who don't, well, I'll just tell a story. I wrote a piece, and I can't spoil on the show, so I have to amend my headline, but I wrote a piece years ago entitled Skype Get Your Sh Together, because we used to use Skype at TechCrunch internally before Slack, and it was so awful. It was like a running joke, like, I'll Skype it to you, you'll get it next week. And Microsoft has yet to actually fix that product they bought for, what, $8.5 billion? It just had a massive multi-day outage and all that. So I think for Microsoft, it would have been a coup to get a lot of mind share and seats inside of companies that are probably moving away from Office and into the traditional enterprise products. But I think Satya was a bit gun shy after the Aquantive disaster. I mean, Microsoft has a history of big deals that blow up in their face when they think they're making good long-term bets. And that could have been what happened here. Also, it's going to be expensive. I mean, at $9 billion, Amazon is going to pay around $2,500 per current paying user. That's a massive premium on their ARPU. Average revenue per user, people who don't know ARPU.
Well, what does that say, though, right? Like $9 billion, but it didn't go through, right?
What do you think about all this, Cyan? Do you use Slack? Do you like Slack? Or?
We just barely implemented Slack at Founders Fund, so I'm a little late to the Slack train.
Do you know what I'm sad about? Peter Thiel?
What I'm sad about, no, Peter's not on there, but what I'm sad about is that Tony Hsieh showed me Slack in the early days. And he basically said, this is going to be huge. You need to invest in this. We all have our misses.
How early was that?
It was really early. Like, he was one of the only, like basically downtown Las Vegas was one of the projects, and it was, like, one of their test groups.
No way.
Yeah.
That was his big invest in Las Vegas, making it into a tech hub thing. What was that called?
Oh.
The Downtown Project?
Downtown Project.
Yeah. That was
so
cool
it was around
thing.
That time when that was happening, and I regret not.
How do you hear about so many things so early? I mean, you may have missed out on Slack, but you got in some other really big ones.
You guys wrote about something that's early, speaking of Slack, called Twist. There's some news that you guys wrote about that, but Twist is a Slack competitor. Uh-huh. So I think that's kind of interesting. You guys maybe haven't read, you probably don't read everything that comes out on TechCrunch. There's so much stuff.
There's a lot of news that comes on TechCrunch.
But yeah, so, you know, I do think there's room for... the way I think about things, because I'm living, I don't follow public markets, and this sort of thing isn't interesting to me or my job. But I am interested in the fact that there's this company that launched that claims to be possibly a competitor to Slack in the long term. And so, is there room for another one? You know, can they actually hold a monopoly? Would be my question.
Sure. Well, we'll have to see. Thanks for tuning in. Come back next week.
All right, everyone. We want to say a special thanks to our producer, TechCrunch's own Christopher Gates, our executive producer, Henry Picavet. Thank you to Katie Roof. Thank you to Matthew Lindley. And thank you to you for leaving us that 5-star iTunes review. That's Equity. We'll see you all next Friday.